Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This nation's professional soldiers and sailors and airmen were trained to fight two wars at once. But this decade has been more than they or their families bargained for. Three, four, and more rotations into Iraq, Afghanistan, long, dangerous deployments piled up while those at home live out the best years of their lives with an empty chair at the table at every meal. The troops make huge sacrifices, so have their families. This hour on Point, we're talking with military spouses, military wives, about life at home as two long wars stretch on and on, about who's carrying the weight at home for our battles abroad, and what that feels like day to day, year on year. You can join the conversation. Is this your story, your neighbor's story, at home doing double parenting with a husband or wife away for a long time at war? Everybody's talking to and about the troops lately. Here in Baghdad on Tuesday is President Obama speaking to troops at Baghdad's Camp Victory.
You have given Iraq the opportunity to stand on its own as a democratic country. That is an extraordinary achievement, and for that, you have the thanks of the American people.
And here's Vice President Joe Biden at Fort Bragg yesterday, welcoming home the 18th Airborne Corps after a 15-month deployment. A lot has happened back home in that time, Biden said, while these soldiers were thousands of miles away.
Your child takes his first step, spoke his first or her first words, had birthday without you, maybe more than one. Things around the house that needed to be done weren't able to be done. Some of you even suffered losses in your family in those 15 months. So folks, we want you to know, we genuinely, genuinely appreciate your families almost as much as what you've done for us. They have been incredible.
Good words, but what is it like to live it? I have three guests today, two from Fort Bragg in Fayetteville, North Carolina, where the Vice President spoke yesterday, and one from Fort Drum in upstate New York, home of the 10th Mountain Division, which has been fighting in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and will be heavily involved in the coming surge in Afghanistan. From Fayetteville, we're joined by Kelly Wright and Rebecca Sanderlin. Both their husbands have had multiple deployments in the years of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Kelly Wright, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
And Rebecca Sanderlin, thank you so much for taking the time today. We may have lost Rebecca for just a second there. And from Fort Drum, we're joined by Fadia Champlain. Both her husband and her son are currently deployed. Her son in Afghanistan, her husband in Iraq. Fadia Champlain, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for the pleasure.
It's really good to have you all. Fadia, let me come first to you. Just these are long wars over many years now. What is it that people need to know about what it's like on the inside supporting these troops off at war and taking care of families and everything else in life back home? What's the essential thing you'd like the rest of the country who's not shouldering that to know?
Good question. There's so much that's involved to answer that, but I guess I would have to say that, you know, it's just as much as a fight here at home in what we do and how we struggle on a daily basis. And most of us are single parents, not by choice. Our spouses are deployed, and it's a different mindset, a different game, and it's hard. It is very hard, and yet we have days that are wonderful and great, and they fly by, but I won't say that those ones outweigh the heavy ones.
Your son is actually a nephew, but you raised him from a baby as a son, currently in Afghanistan on his fourth tour. Your husband in Iraq on his first tour. That's a lot of years when these wars have been right in the middle of your mind, your family, Fadi. That is a long time.
It's a long time, and it's a very different mindset to have your child go off to deployment than it is to have your spouse leave. So I thought I was prepared. I thought I knew how to do this after three times, and when it came time for my husband to go, it's a completely different ballgame, and to have them both gone at the same time is it's a challenge. It's very much a challenge.
Rebecca Sanderlin, NPR listeners will know your voice from the essays that you've contributed to NPR over the years, real insights into family life at home as soldiers are abroad. But, you know, the old kind of cliche is, well, you know, this is a professional army that they signed up for this, and here we go. I don't think many people would actually say this, but, you know, there's some sense of this out there. We've got a professional army and military. This is what they signed up for. So deal with it.
Yeah, I think you'd be surprised at how many people actually do say that, almost verbatim. But I think the thing that they're missing in thinking or saying that is that while we did volunteer for it and we volunteer for it again and again, and I think, you know, most of us are happy to do that, you never really know what you're signing up for. You know, no one can tell you when you marry your soldier or when, you know, the soldier, you know, signs on that dotted line that this is going to mean missing all those parts of life, or that this is going to mean, you know, all the nights that you spend worrying. And, you know, I guess to sum it up, I don't think people really appreciate all that's involved in what we have signed up for.
Do you think that given these wars, I mean, the country's paying a lot for them, but is there, in the largest sense, Rebecca, is there a fair sharing of the burden of these wars?
I don't.
Sounds like we may have lost Rebecca for a moment there. Rebecca, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we've got you now.
Okay. Yeah, when I've traveled outside of military towns, the understanding of all that's going on is not the same. And even just psychologically, I don't think the rest of the country is bearing their fair share.
Psychologically, and that it's not present the way, of course, it's present. For you, Kelly Wright, your husband, Whit, a major in the Army, just run down his deployments in the last several years for us, if you would, Kelly. Where's he been?
Sure. He started out 3 weeks after we got married, heading off to Afghanistan for a deployment that was about 6 months or 7 months. And then, 9 months after he returned from that, he deployed again to Iraq. So our first 2 years of marriage, I think we only spent 4 or 5 months together. And then he just returned this past April from a 10-month deployment to Afghanistan. So that was his third combat tour. And he's getting ready to leave this July for another year deployment to Iraq.
So a fourth deployment this July after all those. I mean, when you really sit back and think about the amount of time away, it's kind of unbelievable. How do you feel about it, Kelly? Did you know what you were signing up for when you married a man who was?
Oh no, no, it's a family joke that I told my grandfather. There's no way I'll marry an Army guy, just because of the perception I had at that time, and that was before anything was really any 9/11 had happened. So. We got married just after 9/11, and ever since, it's been a completely different ballgame and ratcheted up by 100 times what I already feared when I met him. So it's been a rough few years.
We're going to talk about the mechanics of this day in and day out, how it works, and of course, a lot part of those are emotional mechanics. But how do you feel about it? Do you feel, well, this is our country, these are the wars it signed up for, my husband's in the military, this is just the way it is? Do you feel bitter? Do you feel cheated? Do you feel like, you know, hey, I'm a military spouse and I stand up, salute, and off we go? How do you hold this, all these deployments, all this time apart in your mind, in your heart, Kelly?
I think that I range through all of the things you mentioned. It depends on my mood. It depends on the day. It depends how I wake up and get out of bed. If he's home, if he's not, if he's working long hours, if he's deployed. There are some days that I wake up and think, yes, we're doing the right thing, and I'm proud of my country, and I feel patriotic. And there are other days that I wake up and say, I cannot wait for him to get out of the military. This is getting too much. We can't handle it anymore. So there's definitely a range in emotion from moment to moment.
And Rebecca Sanderlin, of course, is not just for the spouse. It's for kids. If there are kids in the family, you've got a couple. How are their childhoods like and unlike, let's say, your own, Rebecca, having a father who's been off to war so much, so often?
Yeah, there's just this sort of weird undercurrent where My husband's been home from his last deployment for 2 months now, and every day my son, you know, cries when he wakes up and daddy's gone to work because he doesn't understand that daddy's coming home, you know, in the evening. And, you know, I obviously never dealt with that. You know, I had a pretty set concept of what a work day was. But for my kids, they don't get that.
And do you see that in the way they're developing attitudes toward the world and the way they see the world?
Well, my kids are still really young. My son is the oldest, and he's just 4 and a half. So he doesn't really have any concept of the rest of the world yet. He doesn't really understand when we go visit my sister's kids, you know, why their dads are home and his isn't. You know,
they're gone. His father's gone. Theirs may be at home.
Yes, sorry.
we'll get that line fixed up. Rebecca Sanderlin and Kelly Wright in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Fort Bragg, please stick with us. And Fadia Champlain at Fort Drum in New York. Multiple deployments, Iraq, Afghanistan, and beyond, right here with us today. It's been a long, long time of war. We asked our guests this hour for some of the music that's helped them get through the hard times as their husbands have been out. Here's Fadia's pick, I Miss My Friend by Daryl Worley. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
I miss those nights. I even miss our silly fights. The making up, the morning talks, and those late afternoon walks. I miss my friend.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with military spouses, military wives, about the life at home as two long wars stretch out, about the military families that bear the weight of these wars on the home front. We're joined by three military spouses, happen to be wives. Rebecca Sanderlin and Kelly Wright join us from Fort Bragg in Fayetteville, North Carolina. And from Fort Drum, upstate New York, Fadia Champlain is here. All have had husbands, and in Fadia's case, a son as well, deployed in the field multiple times for her, with her son, for Kelly, and for Rebecca, again and again, 4 years. They've given a lot of thought and lived a lot of the life of the military wife. Fadia, give us a sense of what it's like there on the base as you and other wives, and I guess some husbands, deal with this day in and day out. I mean, what are the issues that come up? What are part of it's just being apart, but it must just be hard to keep a hearth and home together, Fadia.
It is, and you know, we do have a lot of husbands that are spouses as well, and I think we're those of us here are very conscious to say that we are spouses. We don't just say
yep.
The wives are at home. And
absolutely.
It's just as tough for them. And I think for myself, being involved a little bit in the other side of the Army as a volunteer, we are trying to really reach out to families and have them use the programs that are available. You know, if you're really stressed out and you just really need to talk and you just had a bad day or the kids are just driving you insane, that there are programs and people that you can talk to. And we're trying to break that old way of looking at it that, you know, if you say something that it could potentially either hurt you as a soldier, as your career, or you as a family member, you could hurt your soldier's career.
And, I think if you express some vulnerability or say, maybe I need to talk to somebody.
Correct. I have issues. And, you know, I think people seem to forget that going from civilian to military doesn't make you any less than a human, doesn't take away any of those emotions or feelings that you have. You still have everyday issues, and they still happen.
President Obama is talking about pulling down troop numbers in Iraq, but we're pushing up in Afghanistan. I mean, what's the mood around Fort Drum, when you look out forward on the horizon, Fadia, does it feel like we're going to be getting out of this long war business soon, or feel like there's a lot more to come? What's the sentiment?
I hate to say it. Everybody knows that it's coming. It's going to happen. It's just another one of those, okay, so we're moving from here to there. But the big question that you hear very much under the breath is, well, if this is happening, when are we moving into Iran?
Iraq, then more in Afghanistan, then really the fear of Iran as well? A deployment there?
It is fear. It is definitely a fear. It's never been anything that's openly talked about. Never. Not once. But it's something that it comes out when you have conversations. It's like we just seem to keep moving from one place to the next. And, you know, what's really happening. Sometimes you'd really like to know the truth, and you don't always get that.
Rebecca Sanderlin in Fayetteville, you've spoken in the past. We've heard you on NPR talking about, you know, after 9/11, the American military went to war and Americans went to the mall. Is there, I don't know, an attitude on the base at Fort Bragg about that now, looking out at civilian society?
You know, it's hard to speak for everyone, but I think there is sort of an undercurrent attitude since the start of the war, really, that the rest of the population is not, you know, as involved or you know, very involved at all in, you know, the various fronts. And to echo what Fadia was saying, the attitude here is also that this is not the end, that we're shifting to a different theater and that there might be other theaters after Afghanistan as well.
Your husband's a master sergeant in the Army. He's been deployed, what, three times in Afghanistan, managed miraculously to be home for the birth of each of your children, but quickly back to the action after that. What's it like when the soldier goes away?
It's horrible. I mean, I guess that goes without saying, but those, you know, driving away from the base when they've gotten on the plane to fly off is the worst drive of your life. You know, I cry every time. And then you get home and the house is empty and quiet. And, you know, after a couple of weeks of bustle of trying to get everything together so they can go, it's like all of a sudden, you know, reality sets in and it's just, you know, the loneliest feeling in the world.
And it's not necessarily easy, you and others have said, when the soldier comes home.
No, it's not at all. I compare it to the first few weeks of marriage when you're just getting used to somebody and learning, or first few months really, learning how to live together. You know, every time they come back from a trip, you have, you know, as the spouse, you have your own patterns that you've developed and your own ways of doing things. And then when your husband comes back, he, you know, doesn't know your ways a lot of times, or he's got his own ideas on how things should be done. And so there's sort of, you know, a lot of conflict on you know, and how to work things out. And in our house right now, we're having a lot of issues with me losing my keys because my husband keeps putting them somewhere else.
In a way, I guess when a spouse is away that long, there's control issues or habits. I mean, you just sort of grow off in different directions with that many months and years apart, Rebecca.
Right. And, you know, in our household, I pay all the bills and handle a lot of the household decisions. And that works better for us because my husband's been gone so much that it would be, you know, unrealistic for him to try to step back in and take over and then leave again, you know, and us constantly switch that back and forth. But in households where the, you know, soldier is, you know, likes to control more, it's a real problem because when the soldier leaves, you know, the spouse has to take care of it. And then when the soldier comes home, they, you know, have to battle that out.
You grew up in Nashville, he in Virginia Beach. Like Kelly, right? It was very shortly after your marriage in 2003. What, you moved to Fayetteville 2 days after you got married, and 2 weeks later, off he went.
Yep. It's a pretty typical story, though, in the military communities.
Well, that's fast, and that's a lot. We have a lot of people who want to speak with the three of you, and we're so grateful you're here today. Let's go to Omaha, Nebraska, and Abby. Hi, Abby, you're on the air with Rebecca, Kelly, and Fadia.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to talk about services for marriages. I know that it's very difficult to get help for your marriage, you know, especially when they come back from their deployment. Everything works so differently. In my marriage especially, we've had troubles, but he doesn't want to address them because it would affect his work. It would somehow negatively impact.
Has your husband been deployed, Abby? How long and where?
He has been deployed twice to the Middle East, once to Iraq and once to UAE.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had troubles when he came back after the baby was born.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a parent yet, and I was.
Had he missed the birth while he was abroad?
No, he had not missed the birth, but he left shortly after. And he wasn't, you know, I was changed already, and he wasn't.
Sure. You'd molded yourself around that new child. He'd been at war. Fadia Champlain, you work with the Family Readiness Group there at Fort Drum. This must be a kind of story that you hear again and again, Fadia.
It's very common. It happens every day, several times a day. And we have a wonderful program that's called MFLAC, which is the Military Life Consultants. And it's very, very private. You don't even have to use your real name. You can meet them anywhere you'd like, talk about anything that you'd like. It's just a way for you to, they're licensed therapists, they've been practicing for a long time, and it's a way for you to hear yourself talk and get some feedback, as well as your chaplain is always open for that as well.
Kelly Wright at Fort Bragg, do you feel that there's enough support? There's a lot of talk about it. There was talk during the Bush administration. The Obama administration, again, talks a lot about support for military families. Michelle Obama has taken it on as one of her first lady issues. What about facts on the ground, Kelly? Is the support there for you and other military spouses?
Well, yes and no. It varies by unit. It varies by station. We have moved a few times and from unit to unit and from station to station, from state to state, basically. And I have found different programs in all of the different places, and it depends how much you pay attention, how much you read, how much you listen, how much you ask questions, and how much you're willing to either step out and ask for or accept for help. So there are definitely things out there. There's a 1-800 number for Military OneSource that allows couples 6 free counseling sessions mm-hmm. at any time per year, and that's a great resource, but it also depends if you're willing to call the number and go through the steps to go see the counselor. So,
what about that? You heard Abby in Omaha saying that, you know, they've got some marital issues in her household, but her husband, after 2 tours, is reluctant to get help on that career-wise. Is that a common dynamic, Kelly?
I think that's a very common perception, especially among active duty soldiers, that anything they do is going to be seen or heard by their command, and it'll impact their careers.
Even marriage counseling? That sounds so natural.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's the perception. I don't know that that's always the case. I think there are probably many couples that are seeking counseling that people don't know about, because the Military OneSource I suggested earlier is a completely confidential thing, but they also have to have the time to go see the counselor, which means getting off work and means telling their commander they have to leave and why mm-hmm. do they have to leave. And so it is hard to maintain confidentiality.
Let's get a call from Boston. Melita. Hi, Melita. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I am probably the worst nightmare for many of the people on the air. I'm a Gold Star stepmother. My son was killed on his second deployment when he was 20 years old in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
He was single. But the reason that I'm calling in regards to this program is because my nephew, who's the same age as my Alexander, who was killed, he is on his second deployment. He's been in Afghanistan for over a year. His third baby's on the way. And we are a Latino family. We're
mm-hmm.
Costa Rican in descent.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I'm really concerned about is that, especially since there are so many people who are Latino, African American, so many different varieties of backgrounds,
sure.
the extended family is not addressed. And this is something that I find a little disturbing, because the natural inclination for my nephew, who is currently in Afghanistan, was for his wife and 2 children, and then the baby on the way, to, while he's on this long extension, to live with my brother and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
But because they are Spanish speakers, they know nothing about the family readiness groups. They don't get any information. Unfortunately, the parents are not included unless the ultimate happens, which is the death of their child.
And you're saying there's a cultural inclination toward having the extended family involved here that's sort of passed over.
That is correct. And I also want to tell you that I'm part of several groups. I'm a Gold Star mother, and we work with the Veterans Administration. I'm part of the Massachusetts Military Heroes Fund. We're constantly setting up, since our beginning, we have been setting up trainings to understand the trauma, PTSD, what is going on with those who are coming back from deployment, and that we are also accessible. There are groups out there. Just because the worst has happened to many families, we are involved in the game, because obviously these wars are not over, and they could continue for a long time, and it impacts us as well. And we feel like doing positive things for those, such as the spouses and the children, who are impacted by these many deployments.
Melita, let me ask you, it feels as though things have been quieter in Iraq. Does it feel that way to you? The casualties have been down.
No, Tom, since the beginning of the year, we've had 6 killed in Massachusetts, okay? And 4 of them were in Iraq. The I have a very morbid habit, which is that I receive every one of the Department of Defense reports. What is happening is that they're not being killed. 30% of those killed in Iraq and Afghanistan are not being killed in combat. They're being killed, they're dying due to accidents, due to what is called under investigation reasons. And there is a situation of a suicide that is being investigated by the federal government and the Armed Services Committee. And there have been some homicides or friendly fire that is also being investigated. But since the beginning of the year, there's been close to 100. Since January 1st of this year, there have been close to 100. I believe the exact number is 98 that have been killed in both Iraq and Afghanistan.
Melita, we're sorry for your loss of Alexander, and thank you for your call. Rebecca, what about the straight up loss part of this? I mean, it's not only Melita who's seen these deaths, and it's certainly not only in any single state. It's all over. It must be on people's minds. I've read you saying that, you know, it's a scenario that military spouses play out in their own minds, trying to imagine how they would deal with it if that knock came on their door.
Yeah, speaking with friends of mine in the past, all of my friends that I've talked to about it, we've gone so far as to, you know, pick out what we would wear to the funeral. And, you know, there's a dress in my closet that, you know, is the one that I think I would wear if that knock, you know, were to come. And you do. You play through what you would say when you answer the door. You play through who you would call first and, you know, just every little detail. And I think that you go through that so that you feel some confidence in your ability to survive that situation. Like maybe if you've got it all planned out, then, you know, you won't come unraveled. And yeah, it's definitely something that we all think about.
Kelly, is that just Rebecca, or does it seem every military spouse plays out that scenario? Some have to, too many have had to face it, but does everybody have to imagine it?
It's hard not to imagine. It's hard, especially when they're gone. It's hard not to hear the doorbell and think the worst and to look out the window first before you answer the door and make sure there's not the car in the driveway. I really do think that we all think of that possibility, and that makes it really tough. That makes the whole deployment tougher when you're going through the thinking about the loss part.
Well, I'm living in a foreign country, but I'm bound to cross the line. Beauty walks a razor's edge, someday I'll make it mine. If I could only turn back the clock to when God and her were born. Come in, she said, I'll give ya shelter from the storm.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking with military spouses about the life at home as two long wars stretch out in this decade, about the military families that bear the weight on the home front. Rebecca Sanderlin and Kelly Wright join us from Fort Bragg. Fadia Champlain from Fort Drum in upstate New York. 3 tours to Afghanistan, Rebecca's husband, Kelly Wright's. 3, and maybe headed off again this summer, Iraq, or with the surge in Afghanistan. She says maybe there instead. Fadia Champlain, her husband, Lucas, is an Army specialist currently on his first tour in Iraq. Her son, Martin, an Army sergeant on his fourth tour in Afghanistan. Think about that. Tom from Framingham, Massachusetts is calling. Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom here. I just had a couple of brief comments. The first has to do with the military. I'm a combat vet myself, did 2 tours in Iraq. Mm-hmm. The first is that I read a statistic in Newsweek magazine about a year and a half ago that cited that 40% of the active duty Army had deployed once, 17% twice, 3% 3 times. So that comment relates to the fact that I find the military's way of sharing the sacrifice is incredibly inefficient. I have close friends, family. I've seen exactly what 2 deployments versus 3 can do to a family. It can break a family as opposed to make it, and it's just not okay. And the second comment is just that, again, myself, I'm a vet, and facing recall now, and we have a situation in this country where guys doing 2 or 3 tours are getting recalled out of college to go back. What it's doing to their families, in particular mine, is inexcusable. The good thing is these families have support circles within themselves. The bad thing is I don't like the culture in this country of slap a yellow ribbon on your car and call yourself a patriot. It's just there's way too much sacrifice on way too few. And with the second longest war in American history, I feel like families, not mine, thank God, because they've got so much support, but families without so much support are nearing the breaking point, and it's just wrong.
Tom, let me ask you, if it's inexcusable, the weight being put on these families, what's the answer to that? If it's inexcusable, if we can't excuse it, what should be done about it?
The answer is twofold. The first answer is the military, and they're doing it now. The military changes quite well. However, it takes it eons to change. And they've just started programs recently, you know, training up different soldiers to different combat roles, completely revitalizing it into an unconventional army. But when you look at those statistics and you think about the unbelievable amount of sacrifice on the few people in the military, that's wrong. And the second thing is, you know, and every military family on your show knows this, every military family has this tiny, isolated group of incredible friends and support. Were it not for them, they wouldn't be able to get by.
Yep.
But these people should walk on water. I mean, military families in this country, I mean, they shouldn't pay for anything. They should be pushed through everything. I mean, and I just think there's a giant culture of people who, you know, you say you support the troops. Like I said, you put a yellow ribbon on the car. But, oh, you know, the family down the street, oh, that's their problem. I think that let's put it this way. If a military family, if a Gold Star mother, if any of these people in this state or country have to worry about anything besides, you know, their son or daughter deployed, that's just wrong as a country, and I think we're doing a disservice and not supporting them as we say we do.
Tom, thank you very much for calling. Fadia Champlain, what about it? Two tours there. Tom may be recalled for another. He says, you know, military families should walk on water, should really be helped, should sort of not have to worry about anything except their loved one abroad. Is that close to reality?
No. Let's just say no. That would be a beautiful thing if that were true. I wish I had better numbers to give, but they recently did a poll up here in New York in regards to what a soldier really makes, and is that really poverty level? Yes, it is. Several families that I know don't make enough to support themselves and unfortunately have to go to other resources, whether it be welfare, food stamps, or whatever, just to make ends meet. It's it's really easy for civilian people to say, well, then as a spouse, you should go get a job and support your family.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always that easy. I myself personally have a child who has disabilities,
mm-hmm.
and my husband and I were married for 5 years before we joined the military. We were each other's backbone. When I needed someone to stay with my son, Dad was there.
Mm-hmm.
When Dad needed someone to stay with him, Mom was there. Now we're in the military. I can't count on his schedule. Of course, him being deployed, I can't count on it at all. And so it changes the dynamic of everything that's happening. Wouldn't it be great if, yes, as a military family, we were provided with all that, but we're not? And at the same token, I appreciate everything that I do get. Don't misunderstand me. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I do appreciate the fact that they offer housing and we do have health insurance. And the economy and the times, it really stinks what's going on right now. And I do appreciate what I have. But at the same time, you are told that those things are not, they're not an entitlement. You're not entitled to them. The soldier is entitled to those things. For the family, it's a benefit, and benefits can be taken away at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere tucked in the back of my mind in the corner that says, you know, someday I wonder really how long we're going to have this, you know.
Even those basics, even those very basics.
Yes. So your caller did say is very true, and it would be great if, you know, we were really honored that way. And I have to say that the surrounding community in Fort Drum, in the cities outside in Watertown and Carthage, they're a wonderful community. It's the first time that I've really experienced that there's no us and them. They are right here with us. They support this post. They do everything. You go anywhere, and the first question is, you go to get an oil change. Is your spouse in the military? Yes, he is. Oh, please, let me help you. Whether it's a discount or they take the extra time to do something for you, the community around here is really great. I can't say that that's true for other communities.
Kelly Wright, our caller Tom, said these deployments can break a family. I guess you must know that to be true. You must have seen it, that when it just snaps a family, goes too far.
Unfortunately, I have seen it. this past deployment my husband was on, before he even came back, we had counted, I think, in the half dozen of the closest people that we knew how many had already filed for divorce. And that's a shame, because I don't know that it would or wouldn't have happened had we not been in a military environment and in a deployment environment. But it can break a family. It's very difficult to keep a relationship and a family when you only see each other half the time. And even when they're home, the tempo, especially here at Fort Bragg, is so high. People don't even believe the hours that my husband works. He leaves at 4:45 in the morning and sometimes isn't home until 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night. Mm. So it's lucky for him to see our daughter before she goes to bed. So it's unless you've got a good support network and good communication between the spouses and a good foundation of marriage to start with, it is extremely difficult to keep it together.
Rebecca, you've written about this, blogged about it. You've put up a list of the worst things you can say to a woman whose husband is deployed, and some of them here. Number one, aren't you afraid that he'll be killed? Two, I don't know how you manage. I don't think I could do it. Three, at least he's not in Iraq. Four, do you think he'll be home for Christmas, anniversary, birthday, birth of a child, fill in the blank? Those all seem like things you really shouldn't say, but do they actually keep coming?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that blog entry got tremendous response, and there were lots of people who posted their own comments, but the number one comment I got was from people who said that people had said those exact things to them.
Well, let's go to Manoog in Providence, Rhode Island. Manoog, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Kudos. On Point has probably done one of the most important programs, and we'll probably look at the responses. I feel almost terrible to take just 1 minute away from your callers that should be calling in, and I know that you have to do this program again and again because nowhere in the country is anything really like this being done. So you are the On Point point man for us.
Hey, it's nothing compared. What do you see out there, Manoog?
Well, I was state president of the Vietnam Veterans of America, a congressionally chartered group that had to be chartered because no other veterans organization took us in. And people well know how Vietnam veterans were treated. And that being said, I think I could universally agree with other Vietnam veterans who, going back to the first Gulf War, started to see that there was not going to be some kind of support system for these guys. And we had to do it until what semblance of a support system exists. But they exist in a culture in America. I don't care if it's the country and Western music. And like your former caller, Tom, who was so spot on with all the yellow ribbon stuff without knowing the truth that doesn't come out unless programs like On Point are on, unless Trinity Theater and Tony Award-winning Theater in Providence and the Council of the Humanities put together boots on the ground from the testimonies of these soldiers.
Have you seen the multiple deployments, Manoog? Have you seen the repeated deployments in your circle?
Yes, I'm working on one as we speak. A sixth deployment of one medic, three back-to-back in Afghanistan, three back-to-back in Iraq, and he's in the twilight of his career, and they're sending him back. If anything, he should be teaching here in America. And it's past this tipping point. I think how incredible has the system been to deploy these people, not like the Dura system we had in Vietnam. You went in alone and came out alone. I commend the vice president, but his speech does not get to the fact that a lot of these guys who feel compelled to go back are going back to units that they feel they can't tear themselves apart. They are fighting next to their buddies. They are fighting for their buddies.
And back again. Manoog, thanks for your support of that medic and others, and thanks for your call. Let me get one from South Kingstown, Rhode Island. Erin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm a veteran of the Iraq War myself, and my husband
Thank you.
Is currently on his third deployment to Iraq. We're newly married, and we have a six-month-old baby. And I just read the Army Modernization Strategy for 2008, and it didn't just hint at, but basically blatantly stated that the Army is gearing up to be engaged for the next 30 to 40 years indefinitely. They're changing their whole strategy as to how we can sustain the Army at this kind of combat level, I suppose. And I'd just like to make the point that as a military wife, and my husband feels the same way, if we are under the conditions that we're going to be going through rotations constantly, there is no way that we're going to put our family through that. There's no way that we're staying in the military. So I think that is the general consensus among the soldiers that I served with and their families. And I'm just wondering how the Army is going to be able to sustain.
Yeah.
This is going to be a continual thing.
Yeah, if it's 30 or 40 years, anything like that tempo. Aaron, thank you for your call. Rebecca Sanderlin, you've noted a military wedding you attended recently where, if I got it right, 75% of the soldiers there in attendance were visibly injured. Talk about an indicator. Here's Aaron, you know, worried about the tempo and duration going forward. I mean, practically, how do you look at this, Rebecca? As a country, you know, should we be getting out of the war business or get more people into it or share the burden somehow? What's your answer?
I don't think we have the option to get out of the war business because, you know, we didn't ask for this war, especially in Afghanistan in the first place. It came to us. But, yeah,
so
I think
Iraq was a pretty big,
it was a big detour.
Pretty big detour, yeah.
But I don't think that our enemies are going to leave us alone just because we stay at home. That's my personal opinion. So I think the only solution is for more people to get involved. And as for the wedding that I recently attended, that's my eyeball, you know, guesstimate.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody I saw was limping. And, you know, these weren't serious injuries, not, you know, things that would merit a Purple Heart or whatnot, but just things that happen when people are deployed over and over and over again and not given enough time to recover in between deployments or in between training. And, you know, their knees give out and their shoulders are, you know, messed up and, you know, they're just popping pain pills trying to get through the day, you know. To go off that, my husband and I recently visited a good friend of his who was shot in the neck a few months ago in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. and is paralyzed from the neck down now. Mm-hmm. And he is convinced that he's going to walk again, and he has a great attitude about it. But his main goal is to move again so that he can get back with his unit and get back over there. And I think that is breathtaking.
Kelly Wright, how do we get real about this as a country? You know, you can't go to a wedding where 3/4 of the soldiers there are, you know, limping and somehow wounded, and not think, wait a minute, we're reaching some kind of, you know, stretch. We can't get too far beyond. What do we do, Kelly?
Ask.
Well, I'm going to put that to you, Fadia. Same question.
I wish I had a good answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kelly, are you there?
I am. I'm wishing I had a good answer for you. I don't know the answer to how we address this for the next 30 or 40 years, other than, you know, we're spouses and families continue to hold it together, and many will continue holding it together, but there will be more and more breakage among families and among the soldiers themselves. So I don't know.
Fadia, they're at Fort Drum. What do you say, Fadia? It's too much to ask you for the answer, but give us whatever thought you've got as our clock ticks down here.
Well, I think listening to what everyone has said, it's very sad that when you do know people in your unit, and my husband's only been gone, 6-7 months, and we already have a count of 6 that are presently going through divorces, and some of them have brand new babies. It's very tough. It's very challenging. Not everyone can do it. I'd like to think that, you know, yes, we know this when we sign on the dotted line, but guess what? We really don't. We really don't know what to expect. And I would have to agree that we all have a dress or an outfit in our closet, and we all should be somewhat prepared if someone should come knocking on the door. It's unfortunate, but this is reality. This is how it is. And it's just there. It's in your face. Mm. You see it every day. I live on post. I look across the street. I see things. I see my neighbors. I go to the PX. You see it every day. You hear it every day. And with that being said, knowing that happens, it, for me personally, it does play on my mind. As strong as I know that my marriage is, it is, don't think that I haven't asked my husband, are you doing something you're not supposed to do? Only because you see it so much around you, it plays on your mind.
Be good and be alive. Fadia, our time's winding up here, but we're so grateful to the three of you for helping us keep it real today. Fadia Champlain at Fort Drum, Kelly Wright and Rebecca Sanderlin in Fayetteville. Fort Bragg, thank you for joining us. We'll go out with Willie Nelson, I'd Have to Be Crazy. Rebecca Sanderlin and her husband first danced to this song at their wedding. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
I'd have to be crazy, plumb out of my mind, to fall.